Good day, Internet.
Good day, Internet.
Good day, Internet.
Jinx.
Roger and Tasia Custody. Jinx. Woo-hoo. Somebody owes somebody a Coke.
Or a Pepsi.
I don't know. I think
every time
rules
you ask
change.
For a Coke, people are like, Pepsi okay? So, whatever. Yeah.
And sometimes people are like, no.
It isn't for me. I don't like Pepsi.
At all.
Oh, it's too lemony. Yeah, some people find it's too citrusy. But you know what isn't citrusy?
What is that, Roger?
Tech news.
Yeah, tech news. It can be citrusy. I don't know how much citrus we have in the show. We will leave that to y'all to decide. But since we're all here, I feel like we should get right into it. Who's with me?
Let's do a tech show.
All right.
I am with you.
All right. All right. Tasia, you in?
I'm ready, Captain.
Sounds good.
I was going to be like, aye, aye, Captain. And then I thought against it. And now I said it anyway. So,
trust me, many things I've said where I'm like, that was weird. Why? Why
are they going to get this?
Why was that said? Well, you know, hopefully we'll get through the show with all the right things said. I will go ahead and count myself in. In 3, 2, this 10th year of Daily Tech News Show is made possible by its listeners. Thanks to all of you, including Adler, the puppy engineer, Dale McKay, Matt Zaglin, and our new patron, Brian. Welcome, Brian. On this episode of DTNS, ARM's IPO has a pretty positive initial day. MGM isn't out of the hacker woods, but it's got company. And Google wants to extend the life of Chromebooks in schools. This is the Daily Tech News for Thursday, September 14th, 2023. From Studio Secret Bunker, I'm Sarah Lane.
From Columbus, Ohio, I'm Rob Dunwood.
From a balmy Southern California on the show's producer, Roger Chang.
And
from Scottsdale, Arizona, it's me.
I was about to introduce you, Tasia, and Tasia's like, I can do this myself. Tasia Custody, YouTuber, host of AI Name the Show, and also Talk Techie to Me, the podcast. We are so glad to have you back on the show. Welcome back.
Well, thanks, guys, for having me back, even though I talked so long last time.
Please talk long again. That's why we have you. That's why we love ya. All right. Without further ado, we've got some tech news, so let's start with the quick hits. Now valued at more than $5 billion, ARM's IPO is shaping up to be the largest of 2023. The UK chipmaker priced 95.5 million shares at $51, which climbed to $56 in just a few hours on the NASDAQ market where it was listed. Simi Analysis notes that ARM's success is due to its innovative architecture, flexible licensing model, and strong ecosystem of partners.
HP announced the HP Spectre Fold, a Windows laptop with a 17-inch OLED screen that folds in half. HP says the Fold is the world's thinnest and smallest 17-inch foldable PC, weighing in at just under 3 pounds. If you're already sold, consider the price, which is $4,999.99.
Ooh, dear. Yeah. Sony threw us a little Thursday curveball because this week wasn't weird enough, announcing a surprise state of play, streaming event later today, September 14th at 5 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. The stream's announcement promises something for everyone, including updates on major releases and PSVR2. The company says the showcase will have a focus on indie and third-party titles and will primarily feature updates to previously announced games. So probably not a huge announcement, but something if you're in the market.
In good gaming news, Bethesda Starfield announced it will add deep learning super sampling support, or DLSS, and other PC features that were missing at launch. The developer says an HDR calibration menu, a field of view slider, ultra-wide monitor support, and brightness and contrast controls are also new features on the rollout.
Yesterday, we talked about Game Engine Unity's planned install fees that did not go over well in the game developer community. Unity says in a blog response to the backlash that, quote, 90% of Unity customers will not be affected by this change, end quote. Reminder that Unity previously said that it will charge 20 cents per install for any game with more than 200,000 installs. That sparked a lot of questions about multiple installs, Game Pass, OS reinstalls, a variety of other issues, and a lot of people said Unity didn't really answer those questions. The company did say it will only count net new installs on any devices starting January 1st, 2024. It also says developers won't pay fees on reinstallations, fraudulent installs through botnets and other tricks, trial versions, web and streaming games, or charity-related installs. Well, the whole Unity thing is a bit of a blur, but what isn't a... I was about to say what isn't a blur, Rob, but it may be a blur, is what's going on in Las Vegas. We have a bit more to discuss from our conversation yesterday about MGM's hack. The hackers who allegedly breached the security at MGM's casinos earlier this month. The new news is that they originally planned to manipulate the software running the slot machines and, quote, recruit mules to gamble and milk the machines. End quote. On the Telegram messaging app, a person who claimed to represent the group that claimed responsibility for this hack described the techniques used to evade detection. Security researchers familiar with the group, nicknamed Scattered Spider, said that the technical descriptions given to the Financial Times did match attacks on at least 100 other victims over the past 2 years, which makes you feel like, okay, maybe this group that's claiming responsibility is indeed responsible. But Rob, there's a little bit more here, isn't there?
Yeah, there's definitely more. So Bloomberg sources initially said that Caesars, not to be confused with MGM, apparently paid tens of millions of dollars to hackers who broke into the company's systems prior to the MGM leak and threatened to release the company's data. Thursday, after Bloomberg reported that Caesars had been hit by a cyber attack, Caesars disclosed the hack in a regulatory filing. So, the gambling companies in general are getting hit here. And here's the weird thing about this. Caesars didn't say anything until MGM got hit. They kind of waited on this. The laws have changed. They don't think they go into effect. The SEC has changed reporting rules. So the 8K that Caesars ended up doing yesterday, I don't know that they would have been able to wait to do that. I think the new rules stipulate you have to do that within 4 days of being aware of a hack. So it's interesting to see how they're still using the old rules, but how things are going to change oh so soon.
Well, we've talked about this quite a bit in the past of, okay, if a company that has a lot of money in reserves is hit by a hack such as this, and the hackers say, give us millions of dollars and we'll go away. You know, we won't disclose, you know, all of the data that we have gotten on your customers, et cetera, et cetera. Does the company do that? Do they refuse? You know, and what's to make of this as a just a regular person who might go to Vegas and stay at Caesar's Palace type thing? I'm not totally sure. Tasia, you know, where do you fall on the idea of hackers being paid to not disclose sensitive data on users from which they have gleaned?
You mean extortion?
That would be another way to put it. Yeah.
Because the backbone for this whole thing is how the people that claim responsibility. I love when hackers come out and say things like they're doing this for ethical reasons. Like, you're not some blue hat hacker that was hired to be a penetration expert from MGM. So let's stop there. Not that I'll ever defend casinos. I'm not saying that. But it's just like, come on, let's say this, for call it for what it is. But it does, you know, become ethical on the end of the actual owner operators, because not only their sensitive data, but all of our sensitive data. So the thing with this latest MGM breach was that we're the regular people like us would have really noticed it is like their key cards wouldn't even work. And so stuff like that started happening, which then makes you think, well, what else, what other information do they get from the system? So I'm assuming personal information, addresses, birthdays, maybe more information. But I don't know, because some companies have paid these hackers off. I just feel like to stick it to them, I wouldn't want to pay them off. Not that I want my information or anyone else being doxxed or like having our information out there used for malicious purposes, but just the whole thing of it is like, you're not some good people hacking this for some good cause. It just bugs me so much. Like, no, you're not going to get your money too. Isn't yeah. that, you're not going to get yeah. your cake the whole, and the eat whole, it too.
Like, pay us and we'll go away thing is like, that's a tough, like, is that really the pill we're all swallowing? Nobody wants to do that. No company wants to do that.
Nobody
I feel
wants
like,
to. Nobody yeah. wants to, but I can see why Caesars did. They paid tens of millions. This is going to cost MGM so much more than tens of millions of dollars. So I can see why, working under the rules as they are, Caesars did it the way that they did it. When these new SEC rules kick into effect the first of the year, it's a different ball game. Would Caesars even be able to, you know, to just pay and kind of not say anything until someone else has an issue? Oh, yeah, we had one too.
That's the big crux of it for me, is like, to them, there's a lot of trust going on here that you're like, I'm just going to pay to make this go away. And we're just going to pretend the whole thing never happened. And I'm going to trust the hackers that they're not going to do this again, when now I already know they have access to my system. And whatever else I do, they're obviously going to get access again to my system. So it's not actually solving a problem. It's like putting a Band-Aid on there right now, and they're not solving for the future or helping anybody else that's going to be in the same boat, which, as we see in this case.
MGM and Caesars, by the way, combine about 60,000 hotel rooms in Las Vegas alone. There are others, but that is where the most of people who would be perhaps going to Las Vegas and have been inconvenienced would be a nice way to put it by this entire thing. People who have been to Las Vegas, I don't know, in any past years, also inconvenienced by this, depending on, you know, the data dump. So yeah, it's bad news. It's like we were talking about Rob yesterday, it's more of the same of, okay, if you are a company that is this big, you're making this much money, based on this many consumers, how do you have that second plan when something like this happens? All right, well, let's talk about schools. Let's get a little lighthearted here. Google is lengthening the life of Chromebooks, hoping to aid school administrators who have said the platform doesn't have enough support to be cost-effective because the support isn't that long. Specifically, Google said Thursday it plans to offer software updates for Chromebooks for up to a decade. The new policy starts next year.
Chromebooks are the go-to in classrooms in the U.S., but some education software doesn't work after Google's so-called auto-update expiration date, after which if your Chromebook is unsupported, it can't be used for mandatory state testing, even if the hardware is still working. So schools recycle and replace them at cost. Here's what's changing. Google currently sets expiration dates based on the release date of specific models. Newer models have 8 years of support, and older Chromebooks have 5. Starting next year, Google will support a given laptop platform, which it considers having a certain combination of hardware components, for 10 years after the first device the platform is available to buy.
Yeah, and the change retroactively applies to any devices released since 2021. So if you have a pre-2021 Chromebook, you have the option to extend the support, which is nice. So to recap, any Chromebook model that was set to expire within the next 2 years can receive an extension of 2 to 3 years, depending on the model. And if you have a Pixelbook, for example, that would be slated to expire in June of 2024. Now it would be June of 2027. So Tasia, I know you follow a lot of Google news. What do you think? Is this the right call for Google in schools?
Absolutely. Not just from, you know, kind of how they've pitched it here in terms of expenses on the school side. It costs a lot to recycle devices. Also, just we don't actually know how much of the device is getting recycled. And to me, I hate waste. So even outside of the cost excess of this all, I love it from a less waste, a better usability. Like, we're all just expected to update our devices all the time. And nobody really gives any second thought about how these get recycled, where the devices go, who could better use a device. If a school in this case decides to upgrade, cool. Now all of these other models anyway can be reused for people in need, or, you know, like now it just becomes less infrastructure, less waste. I am here for this all day, every day. I'm tired of having FOMO and being told to update all the time.
So I definitely in agreement with Google deciding to do this, because, and I've said this many times before, a slow Chromebook is better than no Chromebook. And we know that schools are strapped for cash. But I really feel for the kid that has the 10-year-old Chromebook that's on that last update. I'm just thinking back to when my youngest was in, first started high school. She had a Chromebook from the school, and it was just so slow. It was still supported, but it was just so freaking slow. It literally took minutes upon minutes for it to boot up and for her to move around in it. And we ended up just buying her a Surface Go that she could run all her Chrome apps on. And she ended up using that. So it was nowhere near 10 years old. It might have been a 3 or 4 year old Chromebook. When you think about these devices, they really don't have that much hardware in them. Hence, it keeps the prices down. So I can only imagine what a 10 year old Chromebook runs like with, that has been updated with new software.
I kind of wonder, as we're talking about this, what is, Rob, talking about your daughter and that extremely slow Chromebook that she had, school provided, but wasn't realistic. What does a Chromebook have to do and be in order to be able to keep up with other kids at the school who might have other computers?
Yeah, I don't necessarily expect a Chromebook to act like a MacBook or to act like a $5,000 17-inch HP or Spectra. I don't expect that. But when I say it was slow, I mean, we would turn my,
then walk away and make dinner. Yeah,
she'd turn it on and she'd come home from track practice, sit the Chromebook on the desk, turn it on, then go take a shower and then come back and it's up and running. I mean, it took minutes for it, not as long as her showers, but it took minutes for it to actually just be able to log into it and moving back and forth. So she wouldn't turn it off. She would just leave it, running as long as possible, hoping that, I'm not going to have to reboot it. I'm not going to have to, restart it, because it just took so long for it to come up. And, just hearing her complain about it, that's kind of what pushed us into getting her a new device.
There's nothing as frustrating as a slow device. This is how accustomed we've come to like things right now. It's just like, imagine her workflow too. Like, all you're trying to do is your assignment and you don't want to do homework all night. And now you're just waiting for like Chrome or Google Drive to load.
Yeah. Yes, I agree.
That's all it's built for, Sarah. Like, to answer your earlier question is like, that's really all a Chromebook needs to do is open Chrome and run the Google suite of apps.
And do the things. Yes. That's what you're asking. And let me, finish my math assignment. How many times we all have technical issues, here and there, because most of us are working out of home studios in some capacity. But, wherever you work, it's like if you have a delay of a couple of minutes, we are now conditioned to say, this should not stand. We do not have to deal with that sort of thing. I feel like the sort of, all the kids in school, the Chromebooks, they're just, happy to have computers in general. And I don't think that's the case. Like you were talking about, Rob, it was, difficult for your daughter to use the computer that she was supposedly gifted. It kind of has to work as advertised, or else they're going to have to figure out something else. It does sound like Google's at least trying to add support for a few more years for some of these monitors. Well, if you have any feedback about anything that gets brought up on this show, do get in touch with us. We have lots of social accounts that you can use. DTNS Show on X, formerly Twitter. Mastodon at Mastodon, mstdn.social. Daily Tech News Show on TikTok. And DTNS Pix, PIX, on Instagram and Threads. All right, let's talk about some science. Scientists from Columbia University have revealed that current AI models have limitations when it comes to distinguishing nonsense from natural language inputs. So what's junk? What's real? The study tested 9 AI models by submitting pairs of sentences and then asking which one would be likely to be heard in regular speech. The control group was 100 people, so small group, who were asked the same questions, such as, a buyer can own a genuine product, also one versed in circumference of high school, I rambled. Probably nonsense, right? Did the AI get that? Although more sophisticated models like GPT-2 did better than the simpler models, all of them exhibited blind spots, labeling some sentences as meaningful when they weren't, that human participants thought were gibberish.
Tal Golan, one of the authors of the research paper, said it was premature to allow these models to replace human decision-making in areas like law, medicine, and student evaluations. Among the issues highlighted is the ability for people to intentionally manipulate models.
So, Tasia, I don't know how much you've been playing around with LLMs, I think this is one of the main things where I feel like people kind of do like the, like, I gotcha, AI. You thought that was a real sentence. It was not. It's probably a good thing that we're figuring out a way for robots to know how to weed those out.
Oh, 100%. I was just talking to Tristan about this, who I host AI Name the Show with, and we were talking about it in terms of like medicine and health and vaccine development and all this kind of stuff. Like, these large language models are really good at sometimes recognizing forms of language, like can pull out big, like mass amounts of text quicker than you or I ever could. But it's not so great at saying whether or not that information is factual or whether or not it's misinformation. And then this is where we get into a lot of these problems in terms of how quickly misinformation can spread. So I can't say I'm surprised by this. At the same time, it's like, are we out here to just say, I gotcha, AI? Like, everybody just needs to be aware of the limitations, and then we need to start building systems and balances in place that can also get a little bit better and a little bit smarter and train these systems with what is, in this case, gibberish or misinformation, not factual stuff. And that's going to take a bit of time. But the good news is that all of this advances so quickly. So it's the bad news, but it's also the good news, because hopefully we can train these models a little bit better to start recognizing nuance and forming those language structures a little bit more accurately and in ways that just make sense that aren't these sentences.
You know what's interesting is that we're talking about all this, and we're really talking about, you know, these language models. And they've been around for a while, but we've only really been using them for not even a year yet. You know, ChatGPT hasn't even been out for a year in the way that it is out now. So it's amazing that, you know, like, you know, how fast we've moved. And okay, yeah, I'm going to figure out how to trick this thing. We're actually trying to fool something that hasn't even been out for a year yet. That being said, they're going to get significantly better. At some point, I would imagine that all the AIs, if they're going to be around, would be able to figure out what is a gibberish sentence as compared to one that is not. This is what it reminds me of. I don't know if you guys have ever seen this. There's a video, I believe it is an Italian pop star singer that is singing a song in English, but the English makes no sense. He's just using English words. And the video went super viral, and but it sounds like gibberish like this. So clearly, an American listening or someone who speaks English would know.
Yeah, Romania or something.
Yeah, but I think AI is going to get to the point to where it'll know as well. It'll figure it out.
It you know what? That's a great point. I feel we you know, we sometimes get emails, feedback@dailytechnewsshow.com, by the way, if you want to send your own, you know, where people are like, AI, like, are we ever going to stop talking about this? Well, probably not, because it keeps AI is a part of what many people are going to use in their lives going forward. We are in the early steps to where I think we get stories like this where it's like, well, the AI didn't know that I said a nonsensical thing. It just tried to do its best. That's because it's AI. It's not supposed to know that I was trying to trick it. It's supposed to help the person who's not trying to trick it. You can trick things. You can trick all sorts of things that are not human. And, you know, okay, you know, now where do we go? I think what we can get out of a story like this is, okay, you might need to still think about how you phrase a query. Think about how the AI like knows certain keywords, but doesn't necessarily know the cadence of your speech. And that's all kind of exciting because it's exciting about what it's going to be in probably not the too distant future. But yeah, that's where we are now.
So yeah, I'm really excited about AI. You know, I kind of was, you know, on a roller coaster with it. Like, you know, initially when it first, you know, when ChatGPT first came out, I thought it was awesome. And then it's like, is this all we're going to talk about? But when you really think about what these large language models can do, and not just you talking to it, trying to trick it, but, you know, when it can scan your data and actually come back and help you with your thoughts. I mean, I'm using things, you know, that are AI related to actually help me with like podcast show notes. It's like that's pretty impressive. This is technology that just it didn't exist 4 or 5 years ago for us to be able to use it the way we are today. So, yeah, there's problems with it because it's still a baby. It's still, you know, like I said, we haven't been talking about these things for a year yet at the way that we are now. Eventually they're going to get better and they'll become more useful and they'll just be like, you know, I'm not going to say the names, but the thing for the iPhone, the thing for the Android phones that you say, and they answer questions for you. It's just going to be, you know, it's just, they're going to get better and better and better over time.
This is Tisha, I was
about to ask you if there's anything that you've used lately that is definitely AI enhanced. I did that just yesterday when somebody asked me about scope of work. If you're a producer, you know all about that. And I was like, oh gosh, I don't really have anything at the ready. And the person who asked me for it was like, just do a ChatGPT, sir. And I was like, yeah, okay.
It's become like an unpaid assistant now.
Yeah, right.
Truly, like, that's what I mean. I just, when I say things like we humans, we just expect so much all the time right away. And it's like, as Rob is saying, like, we didn't have commercial access to this at our fingertips, like he said, not even a year ago. And we're already so demanding of it. But it has become a big part of my almost daily workflow. I use a few different ones, but like ChatGPT in particular, I use to write a bunch of social posts for me because that stuff to me is just so time consuming and I don't love doing that part of the job. So it can do a pretty good job at writing posts for specific networks. I've used it, you guys, to help me write a contract, a business contract. Of course, check your work. I double checked it all.
I changed some language
that fits into like video production and stuff like that. But I was kind of struggling with what this one client was asking for. And I gotta say, ChatGPT knocked it out of the park, and I just had to make a few tweaks. And so in something that took me probably 20 to 30 minutes, as opposed to like writing something from scratch or Googling, like, I need a template. And then, okay, I gotta build off this template, or I gotta figure it out. You know, it was just, no.
Yeah.
There was no formatting. Well, so okay. It's just like, let's not be so demanding. Like, I think where I want us to be demanding is that in the accuracy of it and to understand a bit better what the technology is and the limitations of it and the power of it and the risks of it and the amazingness of it and all the things. But of it itself, it's just pretty cool. I mean, could we just give it a rest?
Yeah. I mean, for everybody who has an assistant in the workspace, I do not, you know, where I kind of go like, well, wouldn't that be nice? Mm-hmm. If this can be my assistant and I'm still the person who makes the final call, amazing. You know, just like you were talking about, Deja, you know, putting together some sort of a contract. It's more your friend than not, sounds like.
It's also great for summarizing articles. Just as a good little tip.
That too. Well, if you feel like, you know what, I'm out of here, guys. I need to take a vacay. You wouldn't be alone. If you're ready to hear about the best way to fly to your next destination from where you are currently, Chris Christensen has an answer for you.
This is Chris Christensen from Amateur Traveler with another Tech in Travel Minute. I've got a website that I'd like to share with you, and that's flightconnections.com. It's a simple site. All it does is help you map where you can fly from to. And so, for instance, if you just put in a single airport, you can find out where you can get direct from that airport. Or if you say two airports, you can see what routes will connect you between that airport. So, for instance, I'm interested in a trip to Malta, and I was trying to decide, could I go from San Jose or from San Francisco? And it was quite clear by typing in San Francisco versus San Jose that there are a lot more different possible connections. There's no direct flight between the two, but there is more than a dozen different connections from San Francisco and only one from San Jose. You can pretty much guess that San Jose is going to be more expensive, and it is. The site again is flightconnections.com. It's a fun little interface. And this is Chris Christensen from Amateur Traveler.
Oh, Chris, he always comes with the knowledge. I'm actually trying to figure out how to most cheaply get from where I am to New York City because it's very expensive. So this is going to be a real help for me. I don't know if all y'all have been looking at flight connections recently, but I think in the post-COVID world that we're in, if we can even say that, post-really bad COVID world, you know, the airlines are still catching up.
They're making their money.
Mm-hmm. Indeed, they are making their money as they continue to try to catch up. Tasia Custodi, thank you so much for being with us on the show today. Such a pleasure. Let folks know where they can keep up with the rest of your work.
Yeah, you can find me at TasiaCustodi.com. I'm at Tasia Custodi on all the things. You can head to YouTube and find me there as well. You can listen to Talk Techie to Me or our other great, awesome new podcast that I do with my friend and fellow tech expert, Tristan Jutra, called AI Named This Show. And if you can't get enough of AI, you're going to want to listen to it. New episode drops tomorrow.
And patrons, stick around for the extended show, Good Day Internet. We'll be talking about Amazon's new search options that might remind you of Pinterest's model.
Yeah, but just a reminder, we do the show live. You can catch it after the fact, but if you can join us live, we'd love to have you Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. Eastern, 2000 UTC. Find out more at dailytechnewsshow.com/live. We'll be back doing it all again tomorrow with Will Smith joining us. And guess who else will be back tomorrow? Dot, dot, dot.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.
Wonderful show. Tasia, you're the best.
Well, thanks. Thanks for letting me interrupt you and scream in your ear all the time.
I mean, I'm the world's worst interrupter, so thank you.
I love your passion. When you get going, Tasia, you are into the topics. I love your passion.
I'm an audio engineer's worst nightmare.
No, it's great. It's amazing. Okay, so before we talk about a little bit about what Amazon is doing, just a reminder that we would love your show title suggestions. Go on over to showbot.tv/DTNS2 and make your voice heard. Got some submissions in there already. So submit and vote. Thank you in advance. All right, Rob, what is going on with what Amazon is doing?
Well, Amazon announced a new search and discovery feature designed to help people search for products on mobile. It's an alternative to Google and Pinterest, and some might say a direct competitor. Amazon also announced multimodal search, more R efforts, and a new Find on Amazon feature that finds similar products to those in a photo you share directly with the Amazon app. So kind of cool if you'll be able to take a picture of something and go find this on Amazon.
It's like Google Lens type stuff right
there. Yeah, that's a... Which I use Lens all the time.
Yeah.
So I can absolutely, I use it all the time.
Yeah.
All the time.
Okay. So like what did you use Lens for today?
I told you about, I had to run to the grocery store to help my wife out. There was a, you know, one of those mobile billboards driving that had a QR code on it. So I just took a picture of it. And, you know, cause I just literally put my phone up, took a picture of it, but I'm driving. So I can't actually look and scan and do all that stuff. So I just took a picture, but when I was able to stop and sit down, I go back to the picture, open it up in Lens, just click on it. It took me right to the website. I do that kind of stuff all the time, or you'll see a URL somewhere, take a picture of it. When you don't have time to grab it right then, and then you open up the picture, click on the URL, it takes you right to it. So for me, I would say that I use Lens darn near. It's probably not an everyday thing, but I probably use it more than 10 times a week.
You know, it's funny that you mentioned that because I've never really thought of Amazon as, oh, a company that has to catch up in this regard. But now that I think about it, it's like, no. I mean, I scan my palm at Whole Foods Markets now, you know, thank you, Amazon. But as far as search, it's kind of antiquated. And if you're used to it, you're used to it. And I tend to just buy the same things on Amazon over and over. But yeah, more of that search that is keyword, sure, but that is only one part of how you can use Amazon will be an interesting thing going forward, especially with third-party merchants. Yeah.
I will give you an example specific to Amazon and why Amazon would do something like this. I was actually, I needed a bracket for the door to the vanity in one of our bathrooms. And the bracket broke. I didn't need the whole kit. I just needed this little bracket. So I took a picture of it, pulled it up on Google Lens. Google Lens took me to Amazon, but it also took me to Lowe's. It also took me to Target. It took me everywhere that it thought had the, the item. But Amazon, they want to keep you inside of their walled garden. So if they can offer that search, because Amazon did have it, but so did the other places. So now I'm comparison shopping. But if you really, you know, use Amazon a lot and you're just in the app and you take a picture of something because you want to get it from Amazon because you've got the service and you want to get the next day or same day in some cases, it behooves them to keep you in that app as compared to going somewhere else to search for the thing you're looking for. So I see this, you know, I don't want to say it'll be a boon for Amazon, but I absolutely see people using it.
Mm-hmm. Anything to make it easier. Like, I feel like we're all inherently lazy in the sense of, like, any extra tap or click is kind of like, oh, really? So if you have to copy and paste from like a browser to one browser or whatever it might be. So anything that you can do just in app like that. And that's probably their big win is A, identifying things. Because like you're saying, like you may not even know the name of a part you're looking for or what exactly the thing is. And then instead of having to use something like a Google Lens, if you can just do that all in-house, they know what.
You know,
and it's going to work for me.
I'm curious to know because I know there are more than a few Amazon sellers who use misleading images in their product categories. For example, I needed gate wheels, which I paid entirely too much for, and that's a story for another day. But I could have got them off Amazon for like $200 a pop, which would save me so much more money. But they come in a variety of sizes, so I could take a picture of my rusted 6-inch, you know, a rolly gate wheel. And I don't know if it would pull me up because all the ones for that particular wheel are all the wrong size. And so it's not like a shoe where I can just like scale up. Oh, I need the next size up because they only sell the 4-inch wheels. So I'm sure it works for particular products very well. But I think for the secondary market for sellers, I don't know. I have a feeling it might be a crapshoot. But if you don't know what it's called, it could be like 65% of the solution.
We're still checking our work.
Tasia, how much of a Pinterest user are you, if at all?
Not a huge Pinterest user. Like, I have
an
account.
Me either. And, you know, a lot of this, you know, when I was looking at the story earlier, is like, you know, Amazon wants to be a little bit, you know, Pinterestier. And yes. I'm like, okay, well, of course, because everything that you see on Pinterest is visual based, you know, and then, you know, if you're lucky, there's a link that you can click through to learn more about it. I wonder how Amazon might have some sort of a, like, things you might want feed that is more visual than, you know, product spec, you know, a sentence based. I don't know. I'm just kind of thinking out loud.
Yeah. I mean, they already know all of our habits before I know them. So it's already like, you may also like. And
of course. And sometimes I'm like, I do also like that.
I do also like. Yeah. But yeah, it's not like the prettiest thing necessarily. And sometimes it's inaccurate. And if you have multiple people using the same account, then you can be like, no, that wasn't my purchase.
But I mean, quite honestly, even on, let's say I'm going to buy a pair of socks on Amazon. I've bought a million times before. Like, on that product page, we've all been there, you know, and you sort of go down and there's some user reviews that are, who even knows how much those are gamed. And there's the manufacturer little blurb about what the product is about. And then there's things that you also might like. It's kind of a mess. It's just that Amazon has done this for so long that we're used to it. But I think it could be reimagined.
Transformative.
Yeah, transformed. In a way that, I don't know, no one's gonna ever accuse Amazon of being like at the forefront of, you know, a cool UI experience. It's just that they have everything.
Which is, in of itself is kind of creepy. I mean, it's like you're shopping at the company store all the time. But they do have such a wide variety of products. That it's definitely anything that helps, you know, reduce the amount of friction people have when working with the store, is good. I mean, there are some other shonky, you know, weird things that Amazon does on their site when you go shopping. But yeah, I mean, it's weird. Are there things that you never go to Amazon to buy? Like, is Amazon always the first stop? And you're like, oh, I need to get
question.
A new pot.
Live really close to a Target, which I mean, Target is my favorite place in the world. Mm-hmm. So sometimes I just walk through there to be inside of a Target.
Target therapy.
Thank you. Thank
you. The
bullseye
for you.
Yeah.
So,
but I don't know. What about you, Rob?
Go ahead, Rob.
We have Amazon distribution centers that are close. So I usually can order stuff before like 2 p.m. and get it the same day.
Oh, it's so good.
It makes it really difficult not to use Amazon when I can literally be looking at something. Oh, man, I need this. And I don't feel like going out to get it, but I need it, you know, immediately. You order from Amazon. And I kid you not, I've ordered stuff from Amazon and had it inside of 90 minutes before.
Okay.
That is a heck of a convenience.
I also have an Amazon distribution center. It's like 2 miles away. Like, they have like a big warehouse. But there's some times where it's like, you know what? It's probably just faster if I go down to Smart and Final or Home Depot to, you know, pick up a thing of cement patch, or other, you know, hardware-y or other stuff. One thing outside of shoes, the only thing I will not buy from Amazon tends to be apparel, because it never fits really well when I get it at home. It's like, I was probably just better off going to a department store and trying 20 shoes.
I mean, that was the point I was making in GDI yesterday about shoes. Same thing, where I'm like, they're just, you never know. You know, I'm a size 6. The shoes could be all over the place.
I'm amazed they haven't had a thing where they send you, like, you print out a template with your printer and you stick your foot on it and then you use their app to scan so it can generally figure out
what... I kind of feel like this is a thing that we've talked about.
I think we talked about it, but I know Amazon, not
a thing that works well that we talk about now.
It does the apparel, but the actual feet, because I find that shoes are more of a, like, hey, it's your size. Like, yeah, it's my size, but it pinches my, you know, my toe, my big toe.
Yeah,
or
and you've got the crimping. Arch and feet are fickle.
And I got wide feet, so like things that are designed for you know, narrow footed individuals look ridiculous on me, because then I got, like, you know, an inch or two of extra shoe space I don't need.
I don't know about you guys, but half the stuff I buy on Amazon, I'm not actually buying from Amazon. Amazon's just fulfilling the order.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, you know, so it's like, that's the store I would have gone to get it anyway. And I think we talked about this, but Amazon is now, they'll go to a store, in some locations, they will literally send someone to the store, pick something up for you, and then deliver it to your house. They're going to start competing with the delivery services.
They are
the USPS at this point.
They're rolling out a new, you know, ground delivery service to kind of muscle in on that. And I would not be shocked if Amazon started offering just straight up delivery service. Not like I'm a seller and I sold you something. It's like, hey, I need this sent to my mom, like this big care package. And, like, when Amazon drops off my order, they'll pick up the box for delivery and they'll deliver it for whatever fee.
Yeah, I mean, what company is better served to be able to do that, even if that's not really their, you know, main model?
They've got the data. When you think about it, it's a logistics issue. So if there's, like, a place where you can go and drop your Amazon package off, they know exactly what truck, what plane, what train, what, you know, they know how to get it to where it needs to go, because that's what they do. They are as much of a logistics company as UPS or FedEx at this point.
It's
when I was doing property management at my previous place of
Studio Redwood.
Yeah, Studio Redwood. I know. Kind of miss it, to be honest. But a lot of stuff that I was, buying on a regular schedule, things like Nespresso pods, toilet paper, paper towels, hand soap, et cetera, et cetera. And I can't tell you how many third-party sellers I was just like, yeah, just send it to me. I don't know, you know. I don't care really who it is. Just get it to me, hopefully within the next couple of days. Mixed results, to be honest. Most of the time it wasn't a big deal, but every so often you kind of get something and you're like, oh, yeah, okay. Third-party seller, let's not do that again. You know, note taken.
You know, if they redid the movie Idiocracy, because they make fun of Costco and a bunch of other big stores, they would have to put Amazon as the number one conglomerate thing
they
would, that people interface with.
They wouldn't even need to talk about the others. It could just be Amazon.
It would just be Amazon. Oh, I got my diploma through Amazon. You just go through the diploma program.
It's convenient. It's quick delivery.
An Amazon diploma. I'm good at this. Thank you.
Idiocracy is one of those movies that you watch it every 5 years and there's something new that you laugh at, even though you know, oh, wow, I didn't think of it in this way, because it ages very well.
Mm.
Well.
Oh, interesting. So in the Twitch chat, WebDude UK mentioned that where he lives near Liverpool, Amazon can deliver from a remote supermarket, which generally doesn't deliver to his or to their area, and about 80% of his fares are no longer listed or available via Amazon. So it's like, it's kind of a, it, you know, this is
so
a thing,
like,
you,
almost like a test that they've been doing.
Well, no, like
in that area?
They can deliver to where they are, but 80% of what they want isn't available through Amazon. So it's like they deliver, but from a store that doesn't carry the stuff that they have.
So Amazon isn't just going to the store and picking up what this person wants.
Yeah.
Amazon is being like, well, we don't have it in our marketplace, so we can't help you.
I mean, and that's kind of the danger, right? Like if your primary provider of all the goods that you use, whether it's food, consumables, anything, and you know, they're like, well, we don't have it. What are the chances you're going to go to another store and just say, okay, what do you have that can do roughly the same thing or do the same thing, but is not the same brand? You know, like it's that kind of weird system where like, oh, it's so easy to pay. It's so easy to deliver. They don't have my brand of toilet paper. I'll go with, you know, the one with the ostrich instead of the bear on it or something. I don't know. I'm making stuff up.
Mm-hmm.
You ever do that? Like it's because you do. The supermarkets do the same thing. They know if they don't have your name brand product, they have the supermarket brand that's just kind of like it, and it's a cheaper. Maybe doesn't taste as good, but you'll get it because you need it right away, and you don't feel like going to another store. And I feel sometimes Amazon does that because I bought stuff that way.
That is true.
Yes, if I don't need to leave the house. And oftentimes, I leave the house, I go to the store, and I say, why did I do this? Because Amazon has this, and the store doesn't have it in stock. Or I still find myself opening the Amazon app while I'm holding the product to see and compare prices. Because I care at that point. Like, I'm holding the product. I could just buy it. If it's 20 cents more, do I care? But then I'm still like, I'm lazy, but I'm cheap. You know what I mean? So I'm still like, could I get it cheaper somewhere else? But no, I'm not going to a second store. It's hard to get me to a first store.
Trader
Joe's.
I mean,
so I always have to go to another store because it doesn't really have everything.
Trader Joe's is one of those stores I physically, all right, we're low on. For example, my kid only eats their brand of mac and cheese, like the frozen mac and cheese, so I have to get that. Can't get it online. And Trader Joe's is like a 10-minute drive away from my house. And so I will go there and pick up all the stuff I need. The other place I will drive to, at least on a weekly basis, is Costco. One, for the gas, and two, because if I get there early enough, I can do my shopping in there 45 minutes, leave, and grab a hot dog on the way out. Because a breakfast hot dog is much better than no hot dog.
Mm.
Those things have been $1.50 forever. They say they're never going to
change. Yeah, never going to change.
Costco's food is so underrated. Their pizza
is delicious.
Thank you very much.
Delicious.
Say it. Lots of cheese. You know what makes a good pizza? Lots of cheese. Nice little layer of grease, but that crust is still hard, but it's not burnt. Still a little give to it. Good pizza. I'm going to defend Costco pizza.
This is the good thing.
I don't know that I've ever had it, but I'm down with Costco food.
I recently watched one of those YouTube videos where someone goes to all these Costcos around the world. It's like, how come their food court food is so much better elsewhere? Like, fine, France is France, so you expect they would have a better selection and quality of food. But even like in Japan and whatever, although I do remember, and I think they started doing it here, but not as easy, is they had sushi at the big island. What's the big island city? Oh, crap.
Kona.
The one on the, no, the other side. That side. Anyways, I went to the
Costco, the other one,
because that's what I do when I travel. I go to the new and exotic Costcos. because it turns out Costco has everything you need to have fun in Hawaii, and it's a lot cheaper. And you
Roger
can get
is a
sushi.
Costco connoisseur.
They sell.
It's
Lays,
true. They have stuff.
They sell surfboards. They sell snorkel gear, fins. And they sell like spam musubi and like actual sushi.
Hilo?
Hilo. That's it.
Yeah. Okay.
So when you're ever traveling, folks, go visit your Costco. You might find some great deals.
I used to have, I'm sure I've talked about this, like a weird anxiety thing with Costco because I'm like, it's too big, there are too many levels. The peanut butter there's too much at a time. I can't do it.
Peanut butter's great.
I just want a little bit of things, and I can't, like, I can't deal with Costco.
It's but not
I also
for you,
love
Sarah.
Target. Also a big store. Has everything. I mean, I can live inside a Target very happily. So I feel like I should revisit the Costco experience.
I will say this. If you go there just to buy food, you're going to be disappointed because it is sort of bulk oriented. But I have kids, so I mean, they don't
But like,
eat
it's
the food.
Not even
I
like
eat the food.
Like the bulk thing, like that doesn't bother me. It's more of just like the sheer like physical nature of it,
that.
Where I'm just like,
it makes
so
me,
many things.
I feel
one
less
store.
Self-conscious running around in like a ratty t-shirt and like, you know, uncombed hair.
You don't have to dress
there
up.
There are
to
no
go to
pretensions.
Costco.
There's no ceiling. There's no, you know,
no.
Weird
yeah.
furniture.
Maybe some beams. Just, but no real
Because you're in a warehouse.
Yeah.
Because you're in a warehouse. You're right. Yeah. Maybe that. All I had to really say is like, I used to be afraid of warehouses, but then they got better.
Well,
they have all the things I want.
The thing with Costco, at least if the reports are true, is that it tends to be one of the better large big box stores when it comes to employee pay, benefits, and the rest. Like,
it's not a co-op, right? Costco?
No, but no. They generally are considered to be one of the better corporate places to work for because they're
for
not
for customers like, and employees. Yeah.
Yeah. Like there's
There's something to that because there are, you know, my Costco, there are two or three workers at the Costco that I frequent that have been there since it's opened. And it's been open for years. I mean, we're talking, you know, 10, 15 years now that it's
yeah,
just been
like
there.
Multiple decades.
But, you know, and these are folks who have moved, you know, who have moved up, you know, in the organization. But, you know, I regularly see, you know, the same couple or three people that have been working there since the place actually opened. And they swear by it.
I mean, like you get to go home and take a pizza with you. Like who? Actually, you shouldn't eat that much pizza.
It'd be trouble. Like
They used to sell pulled pork sandwiches. I'm so annoyed that they don't do that anymore.
They took those off the menu?
Well, out here they did.
Okay.
I don't see it. And they also took down the salad, which is kind of
they have weird, a roast beef sandwich now that nothing beats that hot dog though. That I mean it's a good sized hot dog for $1.50.
And you can buy it. Like you can buy the big pack that lasts you an entire year of like 48 links.
Yes, you can.
And you know, and it's a meal. It's not like your supermarket hot dogs where you gotta eat well, at least I gotta eat two to feel like I've eaten something. Like you can eat one, or if you're a smaller person, you can eat half. And then save the half for dinner.
Cost savings and health tips all in one.
Well, this is the thing. It's.
I mean, listen, Costco, if you can save and be healthy, you've got it made.
They have an optometrist in there. They do lenses. You can buy gigantic bottles of like fish oil and vitamins.
See, this
gummy
is vitamins. This is how I feel about Target. Or I'm like, I can go. I can literally shop for groceries, get a new outfit, get fitted for new contact lenses,
and
buy some
shot.
I don't know some Tylenol, whatever, and then go nuts and maybe get a nightstand.
Just. That threshold collection, I'm going to tell you, I am not allowed in that section, nor the baby clothes section. I don't have a baby, but that baby clothes section, I get stuck in there because everything is so cute and I want it in my size.
True. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And the Halloween stuff. I went crazy.
Halloween, that's my wife.
I went a bit crazy the other day in Target for Halloween.
Mm, yeah,
I
no, it's
thought about
it's,
Halloween.
Stores are so weird. I know it's next month, isn't it?
Yeah,
it is indeed next month.
You would
month.
Think it was next week if you walk into the right store. There's so many, you know, decorations and stuff now.
But this
I
is
started
the
ordering
CVS
stuff.
CVS had Halloween stuff like last month. So
a fun
you know.
Size candy is only a good deal after Halloween.
After it's
so,
so
buy
expensive
it.
Right
you,
now.
You got to buy all of it after Halloween and then save it for a year.
Oh,
not
God.
Try to eat it, and then you can.
No,
it never
can't
lasts.
Come in the house.
It never
like
lasts.
I walked past the aisle in Target, and I was so proud of myself that I didn't buy any of it, even though it was like insanely priced for the fun size stuff. But I knew, like, I'm lying to myself if I'm going to tell myself, like, no, that can just sit in the cupboard. Absolutely. No, ma'am. Mm-mm. It, like, calls to me. And then I'll be like, I'll just have, like, one. I'll just have another one.
And that yeah. doesn't end.
In another
well,
one.
No. And then another and one. Another and one. Then I go put my hand in the bag and there's nothing left.
Well, you know what else calls to us is our Twitch chat, because they're filled with awesome, amazing people that constantly support us, like Rabbit41, Techno Mitch, and Zoe Brings Bacon, who've all cheered us on with bits, and of course, Raisin, who resubscribed with Prime, and Travis B, who just followed us. Thank you, one and all.
Indeed. Over on the Patreon side, we're still having a tiny bit of a problem figuring out how we can track who has given us a raise, but... we want to go ahead and thank Brian, second Brian of the week, by the way. Thank you. And also Tracy, who is our new patron. Thank you so much. And yeah, we'll figure this out sooner than later. But hey, new patrons are good patrons. So thank you to everyone who supports us. We could not do the show without you. Truly. Thank you.
And we'll catch you tomorrow with Will Smith. With Will Smith and someone else special.
Tom Merritt's going to be back with us, y'all.
Yes.
If you've missed that Tom Merritt, well, fret not. He'll be back with us tomorrow. He's back stateside, and boy, did we miss him. It'll be a fun reunion. Don't miss it. Good day, Internet.
Good day.
Good day, Internet.